It's yep, right, is that Riley? Okay. Listen up. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you will be given an opportunity to address the council once you've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name and address for the record and will be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group, and these rules will apply to the second public hearing later in the meeting. With that, we will open the public hearing at whatever time Greg can tell me the clock says. I can't read it.
6:38.
6:38. The public hearing is open, so I go to the audience. Anyone from the audience would like to speak on the six-year transportation plan? Seeing none. We will close the public hearing at however many seconds after the last time I mentioned is on there. City Council, what is your pleasure? Councilman Ronson.
I move to approve the plan as presented by staff. I second.
So moved by Councilmember Watson and seconded by Councilman Brazar to adopt the six-year transportation plan. Discussion, Council. Seeing none. All in favor of adopting the six-year plan, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
It is passed 6-1 with Councilmember Taylor with a no vote, and the six-year plan is adopted. Thank you very much, Council. With your consent and at the request of staff, can we switch items E and F and move just for practical considerations the approval of the International Building Code as the next item? Is that okay with Council?
Sure.
That would be, I believe, Mr. Burnett.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. With me today also is our plans examiner, Jerry Shiner, and he'll be available to answer any questions you might have. This is not a public hearing. It's really a housekeeping item where every couple of years we adopt or amend the building codes that we have. They guide us through the review of various projects. So unless you have any questions, then I'm happy to answer them.
Council, questions about the Uniform Building Code, which I'm certain you all read every night, study it thoroughly? No questions?
Mm-hmm.
Council, what is your pleasure?
Motion to approve the 2015 International Building Code.
Second.
So moved and seconded to adopt the building code. And by the way, we do have Mr. Shiner here. I'm sure he'd love some questions. None at all? Okay. I guess you came here for nothing tonight. Council, all in favor of adopting the updated building code, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It is passed 7-0, the building code.
Mr. Mayor, can you indulge me in
I am not sure. Should I?
Maybe, okay. Because I think the cat's a little bit out of the bag. Jerry Shiner has been with the city for 16 years. I'm wondering if he can come on up.
Don't be afraid.
He noticed that his wife is sitting in the background, and she normally is not here. So I think that Mr. Shiner knows that something might be up. So over the next year, we're going to have several of our staff who are retiring. And typically with retirements, we say goodbye to them on their last day or within a week or so of them leaving. We want to take the opportunity, since Jerry doesn't really interact with you too much directly.
Lucky man.
Right, I know. To experience you about 8 months or so before he retires, and I'm sure he can give the exact day, but so that you can appreciate him while he's still here. For those of you that don't know, over the last 16 years, Jerry has reviewed over 3,000 different buildings. So really a generation of houses that have been built in Ferndale have been built under Jerry's eye. And I can tell you in all honesty that in a small jurisdiction, when you're working together, you get to know each other quite well. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. I don't think that I've ever worked with someone with more honor than Jerry has. And sometimes honor is manufactured. Sometimes it comes naturally. I know that Jerry is very conscious of having that honor and that respect to not only his other colleagues, but also to the general public. And you can see it manifest itself in his interaction on a day-to-day basis, where Jerry, maybe more than anyone that I've met, thinks about what he's saying before he says it and thinks about the impacts of those words or his actions on the people that he works with. I know they don't always appreciate it, but we do see it on a day-to-day basis, and we do see his conscious efforts. So today we want to present to Jerry, in recognition of a career in service to the community, for your unceasing efforts to serve Ferndale and her citizens through your compassion, knowledge, respect, and work ethic, and that your commitment to service throughout your career represents the ideal for public officials.
So I'm thinking very seriously about what I'm going to say, and all I can say is, wow. This is a total surprise to me. This is a very total surprise to me, and I have been known to cry at certain times. Things happen that I appreciate, and I'm trying not to cry right now. So if I cry, it's okay. I don't mind if I cry. It has been an honor to work for the city of Ferndale. I was with the city of Ellensburg. I've been doing this for about 37 years, so I don't know if the years are just running currently, and it really has been an honor to see the changes that have happened here. And it caught me by surprise, which can be good, but I appreciate what Dory says. I appreciate this talk here, and I believe that one of the things he said about speaking to the public is building codes are so exciting. I mean, they can be very exciting, and people want to know what it says, and it's very important for us to read what that says, and then you have to talk to them where they can understand. You built the house, code section 103.1 says what, and then it's important to tell them what it actually says in human terms, because is there any lawyers here tonight? Lawyers write the code, basically, because it's life safety issues, and ultimately, a jurisdiction, if something happens, is responsible. And the building inspector is ultimately responsible. Yes, the jurisdiction can defend them, or is supposed to defend them civilly, but they can be sued personally, so it's very important that they're aware of what they're doing. And if you wanted a little history of building codes, the first building codes were written in 482 BC by Hammurabi, and he was very restrictive. If your barn, if you build a barn for your neighbor and your neighbor, it falls on your neighbor's goat and kills him, your goat will be killed. And then it got more restrictive beyond that.
Those are the good old days.
If it falls on your wife, your wife's killed. If you lose a hand, I mean, he was pretty restrictive, but that was a long time ago. But you're going to get me going now if I start talking. Now you got, you want to shorten up your meeting, but I really do thank you very much, and it's been an honor and a pleasure to work with the city of Ferndale.
And Jerry, before you leave, I was going to bring something today, but I just didn't have time to grab it. Is when a builder comes in, I think he has to bring in two or three sets of plans. Is it two for a home?
Two.
And you mark one up quite efficiently, and I still have those plans, and they're laminated because I took them on the job site. And more important than your help on those plans, because they were important items related to, like you said, life safety, energy, and things like that, was occasionally you, when the inspector maybe was on vacation, you would go out and inspect. And every single time you came out, you helped this young, very green builder get the job done. But as you just said, you explained why things were important, why the code was there, why it was valuable to me as a home builder and a homeowner. And so we've got those plans, and with your red markings, and we will obviously keep them because they're valuable if we ever have to tear the house down again. So thank you for your personal help to
this
me.
This is very touching to me. I very much appreciate this. Thank you, Yuri. Yeah.
We've been playing it
Thank
for
you,
a
counsel.
Long time. And
does that mean you've been wanting to get rid of me for a long time?
I looked ahead in the agenda and I sent him an email like that. This is
very, very heartwarming for me.
We want to thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Burnett, I think we've covered the building code.
Yes.
And now we move on to agenda item E, which is the 2016 comp plan, also a public hearing.
You need me? I do need you. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off with a short video. Well, we're going to hopefully start off with a short video. As we've discussed, we've had some technological issues, but we will see whether or not this works. And then I'll do my presentation, and then this is a public hearing. The video is about 5 or 6 minutes long.
No popcorn?
If you brought some popcorn, you can certainly eat it.
After you share it.
To
my knowledge.
Sounds like Academy Award winning music here.
Why do I want to say an academy goes to?
Well, and unfortunately, we do continue to have some technological issues with it, so I will turn
it
down.
Is it streaming?
It's not. It's got two soundtracks on it, I think. I think there were two versions of it.
I love the idea, though. It's very cool.
It worked out really well for the Planning Commission, so they can let you know how it's supposed to turn out.
I do like that. See, nice. Pictures and
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, move to approve.
Right. Well, that worked for the Planning Commission. So I will talk to you a little bit about the planning or the comprehensive plan, because there are some important things that the council needs to be aware of as to what the comprehensive plan is, and a couple of specific proposals where we do have members of the audience who do want to discuss. So the comprehensive plan is required to be updated periodically. That's in comparison to normal amendments that might take place up to once a year. The update is a complete redo, potentially, of the comprehensive plan, where we relook at all of the development that might occur over the next 20 years to 2036. And then we basically work backwards from there. So in this case, as the presentation indicated, we're expecting to grow by nearly 7,000 people and 4,000 new jobs over the next 20 years. Some people call those targets. That is really an inaccurate way of looking at it. They're not targets. It's not a we are planning with the hope of getting this or that. It is with the expectation that that's the amount of growth that we're going to get. So there aren't value statements added to whether or not this growth is good or bad. It simply is or is possible. Within the comprehensive plan, there are several elements or chapters, and we've brought to the council these chapters one by one for you to look at and look at what the consequences of that growth are. Consequences of that growth, meaning how are things going to look, what kind of projects we're going to need to do, so on and so forth. Typically, the comprehensive plan has very few images in it. It's more just dense text. And it's really hard for the layperson to understand because you use a lot of jargon in it. What we've tried to do is maintain the facts within the comprehensive plan, but through things such as a working video and other accompanying PowerPoints or multimedia presentations to allow the layperson to better understand, maybe not to the depths of that an attorney might or a planner or one of our staff, but to understand the basic concepts. We've also sought to integrate or to combine in some ways our capital facilities planning, water, sewer, storm, with transportation, parks, to see not only what it looks like on a map, but to see whether or not we can have some more value added by co-planning different projects together, by looking at when those projects might be necessary and to do it in an efficient process. We've also sought to bridge the gap between where we have mostly single family development right now, to bridge the gap between that and dense multifamily development, because there are a lot of different residential types that don't fall neatly into one or the other category. They're more hybrids, and you're seeing this more and more in the larger cities, and there's no reason why we wouldn't start to see it in Ferndale as well, where it might look like a single-family residence, but it might act like multifamily, or it might look like multifamily, it might act like single-family. We've tried to ultimately create a more common sense comprehensive plan, and hopefully one that's actually going to be used, because the worst fear is that we adopt the comprehensive plan and we don't look at it again for the next 8 years. We're hoping that this comprehensive plan, even though it's the end and some folks have said, well, gosh, what are you going to do now that the comprehensive plan is done? Yes, this document is potentially done, but that's really where the real work begins, because every action that we take needs to be in concert with this comprehensive plan. Our six-year plan needs to reflect the 20-year plan and vice versa. So it's a very important document. Aside from those generalities, there are two land use changes that are proposed. One of them, the City Council has direct control of. It stops with you tonight, potentially. The other one, we do rely on the County Council to make the final modification. So I'll start with that one first. The city has been in contact with property owners at the northeast intersection of Pacific Highway and Slater Road. So if you can picture that in your mind, it's just south of Fast Cap, and it's across Slater Road from AMPM. It's about 114 acres that's developed with a combination of single-family uses, kind of some hobby farms, and some businesses which are in a sort of limbo status with Whatcom County right now. It's right now Urban Growth Area Reserve, which means that it's in even more of a limbo status. They can't do much in the county. They can't do anything in the city. What's being proposed is that be converted to just simply urban growth area. The city is not proposing an annexation at this time. An annexation could still be several years in the future. But instead, what we are proposing is that by it being converted to UGA, it becomes eligible for annexation when and if development associated with the lamination on the southwest quadrant of that interchange possibly Costco and the other development that's happening down at the southern end of Pacific Highway, so that property owners in that area and the city can work together to make sure that development at this area is in concert with development in the rest of those areas. Again, the city council doesn't make the final decision. The county council does, where they would decide to switch it from urban growth area reserve to urban growth area. We would expect that it would have a designation of commercial to go along with it. That's one. The other one is on the west side of Lego Avenue.
Just a question on that area. Do we serve that area with water and sewer?
We do not serve it with sewer. Periodically during the summer, we have an agreement with them where we supplement their own water supply with our water, but they are not served in the traditional sense with water or sewer. We don't believe that extension of those services would be cost prohibitive. It's right across, but it is still outside. As far as Lego Avenue, we have an applicant, Tommy Tron, who is the property owner of 0.7 vacant acres on the west side of Lego Avenue, just south of Primrose Lane, which is that trail connecting the former Mountain View school site to Siddle. It is just north of the public works shop, separated from the public works shop by some existing multifamily development. Mr. Tron and his consultant Jay Irwin are here, and they are proposing changing the land use designation from medium density residential to high density residential, with a corresponding change from single family zoning to multifamily zoning. As we tell the Planning Commission and Council always, while the applicant and property owner may have specific development proposals in mind, the Council should remember that things could change between now and when it's ultimately developed. That the thing that you know, the only thing that you know, is the change of the land use designation in the zoning. We have done some analysis as far as potential future build out, and while multifamily would certainly result in more potential units, the nature of the impacts is roughly equivalent to what the full build out would be for single family. Single family tends to generate more impacts per unit. So even if you have nearly doubled the amount of units, your impacts are overall about the same. We did include in your packet a letter from the applicant's representative, as well as a list of property owners or residents in a general area who were in support of it. We want to remind council, however, that it's not a popularity contest. That you could have everyone recommend approval of it, but you ultimately have the final say. We also have a letter that I just received this afternoon from a nearby resident who states her opposition to it. She cites in her letter general opposition to the traffic that might result, as well as a perspective that multifamily being renters are not necessarily as invested in the community as owners are. So I'll pass that around, and with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Council.
I have revised slightly the ordinance to include Slater Road on.
Councilmember Goodrich, and then Councilmember Watson.
I just wanted to state for the record that my wife goes to Tommy to get her nails done and things, and I've heard about the project, the rough little bits and pieces of it. I had no clue of where it was or what the project totally is. But my wife, I just wanted to disclose that my wife was at the Planning Commission meeting on behalf of Tommy. But I don't have any direct connection with it, and I feel that I can vote without any partiality for or against the project.
Duly noted, Councilmember Goodrich, and thank you for saying that. Councilmember Watson.
I'm just wondering, Yuri, why is this coming to us as part of the comp plan, the Trong rezone, as opposed to someone who just has a piece of property and goes through the rezoning process?
Because it does include a comprehensive plan, a change to the land use map, where since it's right now designated medium density residential, there would be no way to simply rezone it to multifamily without a comprehensive plan amendment to make it high-density residential.
Oh.
So basically, he needs to change
too big of a
the
jump.
Family that he's in to do what he wants.
I guess I'm just confused, because I know we've changed other zones, like, you know, by Portaway for that land there. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to do anything with the comp plan, did we?
Correct, because okay. that had, the family was commercial, so if we were switching it from, I believe it was Gateway to General Business, they were both under the commercial family.
Oh,
here,
okay.
the medium density residential family does not yet include this zone, or include multifamily in.
I guess they had a similar question then for the UGA Reserve. We've asked the county to go UGA Reserve to UGA down at Slater. Mm-hmm. Will it, if the county approves it, does it automatically become commercial, or are you going to be coming to us through the Planning Commission to rezone it commercial?
With your action tonight, mm-hmm. we are clarifying to the county that our desire is for it to have a commercial land use designation, which has several other zones mm-hmm. associated.
Okay.
I informed the county tonight that I felt that it was too early in the process to identify a specific zone for it, mm-hmm. since that's something that you'll determine when and if you annex it. And our zones might change between now and then,
okay.
That keeping it with commercial is more.
Yeah, I was going to add, that's a great question, because it is somewhat confusing when you have a map in the comprehensive plan that has land use designations, and then you have a map in our zoning code that zone the property. And looking on these two wall posters, it might be helpful. The one on the right is the comprehensive plan, and you can see there's not many colors, as opposed to the map over here on the left, which has a lot more colors. And that's illustrative of the difference between comp plan designations. You might have a commercial designation in the comprehensive plan, just one, but in the zoning, you might have two, three, or four different commercial zones, gateway zone, downtown, you know, whatever it might be. So the zoning code slices commercial, residential, manufacturing into more finite layers of high density, medium density, low density, so you can get like uses. So the comprehensive plan just talks very generally. We want residential here. We want commercial here. But the zoning code says we want single family here. We want multifamily here. And we want gateway commercial here. So it really breaks down to a finer extent the allowable uses when you get to zoning. But land is only zoned when it's annexed. Before it's annexed, it only has the comprehensive plan designation, what we think it's going to be generally when it grows up and becomes part of the city.
So if the county approves it, we'll basically color it pink and call it commercial. It won't be commercial reserve anymore. It'll be commercial.
It will be...
Because right now it's R5 or something.
It will be commercial from our land use designation. I believe that the county... And I can't speak for the county, obviously, wants to adopt zoning that does not depend on city services, because we're not going to extend services until we annex it. So it is unlikely, and this would be our desire as well, that there be very little, if any, development between now and when it's actually annexed into the city, so that when the city inherits it, we have roughly equivalent to 114 acres of developable property, rather than as we have in Grandview, which is almost fully developed and it's not yet part of the city. So the county is indicating, at least their staff is, that they wish to preserve that so that when it becomes part of the city, it can be buildable. We'll see whether or not their council supports that.
Okay.
It stays under county.
It's
jurisdiction.
Yes.
It's in the UGA.
It still belongs.
Yes. We expect them to vote probably at their second meeting in July. They were supposed to vote by the end of this month mm-hmm. to meet the state deadline, but due to various circumstances, staff changes, other things, that they're unable to.
More questions of staff, City Council. Councilmember Watson again.
I guess kind of as a follow-on to that, so we've given them the numbers that you've based your whole report on. If at some point in the middle of July they come back and say, you know, that 4,000 number's not going to work anymore, I mean, we've done our due diligence. We have... Mm-hmm. done what we're supposed to do in a timely fashion. Where does that leave us?
The county, very frustrated. but the county does have the ultimate authority. Mm-hmm. And county staff and I think the county planning commission and county council have tried to make as much effort as they can or felt they could to telegraph to the various communities what the expectations were so that there wasn't going to be any 11th hour surprises. To the extent that they're successful, we'll only know once they take that vote, and certainly there have been a couple of hiccups, which I think the county council feels are relatively minor. They have not pursued anything having to do with our land allocations, and from my perspective, the city of Ferndale's allocations have been more or less under the radar, where, for instance, we're coming in showing that we could actually use more land for residential purposes, but we're not asking for it. We actually show that we could use more land for commercial purposes because the employment allocation is relatively higher than what you'd see historically. We'll see what happens in July. I know that Bellingham and Whatcom County are being hit on their stuff, but Ferndale has not.
Okay. Thank you.
Council, any more questions before the public hearing? Councilmember Birch.
I would just like the record to show that I will abstain from voting because I am a patron of his business.
Okay. We have a few. No, anybody's getting the nails down there? Yeah, I hope to have a forum here.
Once in a while. Others
should abstain too. Councilmember. Mr. Burnett, is that a remote enough interest to not affect you? You're running out of council members here.
can you vote separately, the comp plan plus an amendment to the comp plan? Yes,
you certainly can, five, and that's what the planning commission did.
So we're not at that point yet because we have a public hearing. But are you ready for the public hearing?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes.
I don't get my nails done. So. So we have already read the instructions for the public hearing. The same rules apply. So we do have names, and then after the names, we'll go to anyone else. Mr. Irwin, would you like to speak first? Public hearing is open at whatever time that clock says. The mayor can't read it. 7:09. Welcome, Mr. Irwin.
Thank you.
Glad you're here.
Yeah, thanks, Yuri. Thanks, council members. Jay Irwin. I am the planning and development consultant working with Mr. Chong on his comprehensive plan amendment and rezone request. Just like to, I guess, add a couple of things or reiterate a couple of things that are already in the record and the follow-up letter to the Planning Commission that's in the packet. Tommy Trong lives, is a resident of the neighborhood and does own similarly zoned property nearby on the other side of Lego Lane on Sunnybrook. So I know it is a little premature to be talking, development proposals, but visually that is the type of development that he is interested in providing there. Just like to reiterate also the consistency with infill, with recommendations in the comprehensive plan of higher density, closer to, walking distance to downtown, utilities in place. Things that you look for in rezone opportunities like this, infill opportunities. See, this property does seem to fit those criteria that GMA and the comp plan support. No critical areas. It's also relatively small too. There has been some opposition, or if there's another letter today, I haven't seen it, but it's I just like to go back to the letter I provided to the Planning Commission, which is reminding you of the small size of the rezone and that the existing character of the neighborhood, certainly as you're driving north on Lego, doesn't give one normally the impression of an existing single family neighborhood that is zoned multifamily south of that. But I just wanted to point out, given the small size of Mr. Chong's property and with the existing school, the existing public works facility, and the existing multifamily nearby, that combined with the traffic impacts of multifamily being similar, the actual change in density that will happen here, as you already put in the staff report, is that the overall traffic volume is really, there's not going to be much difference at all given his existing traffic patterns. So, and then pointing out the Department of Commerce's letter that's in your packet as well, that talking, you know, questioning the city's ability to provide the amount of density that's contemplated in the comprehensive plan. They're going, well, where is all this land coming from? And though a small change, it's a very logical or appropriate opportunity to provide some additional density to meet those goals.
You're probably close to the 3 minutes, but if you can wrap it up, I'm sure council has some questions of you. It is important.
And I just ask that you support and approve the comprehensive plan amendment and rezone, and I'm available for questions.
Are there questions for Mr. Irwin on the rezone? I don't see any. Any other folks wish to speak on the rezone element of the comp plan?
Yes,
we'd like to.
Please. Come up, introduce yourself. Glad to have you.
Good evening.
Name and address.
It's Selena Aspie. And this is Wayne Smiley. And I am the homeowner at 5779 Lego Lane in Ferndale. Jory has a copy of my letter that I wrote to him on February the 14th, 2016. We did come to a meeting previously on February the 9th, and Jory told me to come to this meeting. So I am the one that is voting against this. And I disagree with this gentleman here. We have a residential home that faces on Lego, and there will be significant increased traffic congestion along the road that is right in front of our living room window. Significant. And so I have concerns about the congestion, pollutants, garbage, noise, children, pets, increased foot traffic through my yard, resulting in miscellaneous yard trash, and possible violation, invasion of the privacy of my property there. I did put in my letter to Mr. Burnett, if these are rental units versus owned units, I'm concerned regarding the demographics of the tenants that this would draw around my home. I have worked for the county, King County, for 15 years, and the city of Seattle, and I've moved here to, I currently live in Ferndale, and I run a 32-bed facility in Bellingham. I came here to relax, get out of the city, and, work the remainder of my life in a sort of a quiet place, and that's why I bought this home. So, I think the net effect also is the equity in my home would decrease considerably if I have rental units built all around, and that too concerns me from a monetary standpoint.
Thank you. Would you like to say something too, sir?
When we bought this place, we would never have bought it if we knew a bunch of apartments were going to go up behind us. And they say minimal, hardly any more traffic. Well, they're talking about 16 units at least, and there's usually two cars to every unit. That's 32 cars that there's a ditch, and then there's probably 20 feet, not even enough to put a two-lane road through there, I don't believe, legally, without running through our yard. And we bought this because of, we enjoyed it, and we enjoyed the privacy around us, which we're not going to have anymore if they do this.
Council, any questions of these? Yes, thank you for coming today. We
thank
appreciate
you very
that.
Much.
Any questions? Councilmember Watson.
Thank you.
I actually have a question for staff. I'm trying to understand the difference between the medium versus high density in units. How many units would that be in difference? Because it's medium density now, correct?
It is. Excuse me. It is medium density now. Let me scroll up to my staff.
Single family, right?
It is medium density, which means single family residential. You are correct, Mr. Mayor.
RS6?
It is RS6. Right now, the development could sustain approximately 7 dwelling units per acre. Under the RM1.5 zoning, it could sustain approximately 20 units. So we are talking about nearly a tripling in terms of the maximum yield. As far as the actual impacts, again, in general, multifamily generate approximately 60% of the trips. So we would be looking at the equivalent, and of course, each development is going to be a little bit different, but we'd be looking at roughly a single-family residence generating just over one trip during the PM peak hour gets you just about 7, maybe 7.5 trips, as compared to the multifamily generating, we would expect just about 12 trips in terms of the max.
Mr. Burnett, may I ask you a question? How big is the parcel again?
It's about 0.7 acres.
So possibly 5 homes.
But we would be looking at here approximately 7 homes.
Okay, 7 homes. And I don't know if the guests realize, regardless of council action tonight, that is land that's still eligible for development. If it's not multifamily, the owners or someone else could, without this meeting, put in 7 homes, you said.
They could put in 10 under our cottage housing,
10 homes,
which is also allowed within the RS zone.
So I just want you to understand that. That's, there could still be homes there, a number of them, 10 homes. Okay.
And a home's a little bit different than an apartment.
Granted.
And these are two-story, as I understand from a previous meeting that I met with my rep, with these two gentlemen. So they're two-story units, and there would be 7 of them.
We do not know that. It might be the applicant's intent, but we don't know whether or not the applicant will be successful.
Thank you.
Council, any questions of these guests?
No.
Councilmember Olson.
Yes.
Thank you for coming up today.
Thank you very much.
Councilmember Olson, question for staff.
If we put it to the high density, how many units could go in there?
They could get a maximum yield of 20 units.
20 per acre?
Per 0.75 acres. They could get a maximum of 27 per unit, but it's three quarters of that.
Okay, so 20 units per acre that way, or 7 the other way.
They could get 10 under the cottage housing, under the current zoning.
How can we have so many different? It should be like 7 or 10, not both. I don't get that. Those little things drive me nuts. So potentially, we'll go with 7 for now. 2 cars per person, that could be 14 cars, as opposed to 40-plus cars, because I'm not always going to use 2 cars per unit, because we see that was what was sold to us on 2nd Avenue. It's certainly not the case. So that could be in excess of 40 cars in there. And I'm not saying it is, but doing the numbers, that's significant to me. And if I'm correct in there, what is the, you would access this off of an extension of Civil into that area, or what?
No, and that's an excellent question that was brought up by the Planning Commission. Actually, Primrose Lane, which is to the north, would be it's basically the extension of Siddle, you can think of, just to the west of Lego and south just a little bit. Just as Siddle represents the break between multifamily and single-family east of Lego, Primrose would represent it to the west, and that would be the primary access for all the development.
I don't really... The only thing that I can recall in there, I don't drive that a lot, it's just a narrow, like, trail or something.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
There is a trail there, but the area was identified for public access, and it is sufficiently wide to accommodate 2 lanes of traffic.
2 two lane. Okay, how about feet wise? What are we looking at?
I can pull that up. And I'm not sure whether or not Mr. Irwin has that document at his disposal right now.
Well, what would we require in there for that to happen?
If it was private, we could require as low as 24 feet, and it's closer to 50 feet, I believe. 60? 60. So,
a 60-foot swath through there?
It's sufficiently wide for a public street.
Oh, okay.
Staff has no concerns about this recommendation.
The applicants would have to meet all of our building codes mm-hmm. and standards and streets and driveways and parkings, so on and so forth. Newly revised. Okay.
Okay. That's, yeah, I don't.
Council, any more questions of staff? So I believe there's a, is there a sense that you'd like to separate?
Yes.
Are we still public hearing? I think
I did that.
No.
Other one that would like to speak before I close the public hearing? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing. Thank you, Council. At whatever time you see there. Council, what is your pleasure? Councilman Watts.
I actually would like to separate it out. If we can separate out the whereas, the 2016, the 0.7 acres, just that if we could vote separately on that whereas and then for the rest, that would give everyone the option to talk about and vote on the comp plan, the rest of it. Because there's 300-some pages of comp plan versus this. So.
Navigate us through how to do that.
It could be as simple as converting what Council Member Watson said to a motion.
Okay. I would move that we approve the comp plan, except for that portion of it regarding the 0.7 acres of land west of Lego Avenue and switching it from medium density to high density.
Else? Are you voting?
Because we're just doing comp plan. We're going to pull that out.
So it's not, it's going to bring it back at the same meeting here? Is a second item?
Yeah, someone will have to bring it back.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the comp plan, except the rezone on Lego, off of Lego there. Any questions on the comp plan? Any questions about the main motion? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the comp plan with the exception listed earlier, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It has passed. The comp plan has passed. 7-0. Thank you, City Council. Moving on to a new item of agenda or from the same plan is the Lego rezone. Council, what is your pleasure? First of all, we have recusing themselves. Councilmember, you're going to recuse yourself. You're just disclosing you are recusing yourself. Thank you very much. Five of you that are left, what is your pleasure?
I'll make a motion to approve the changes to the comp plan for the 0.7 acres west of Lego Lane from medium density to residential high density.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the rezone application. Questions of staff? Questions? Arguments? Favor against? Councilmember Watson?
I won't be supporting it only because I think it's just too much change. If there wasn't that one piece of land, if someone was taking the whole thing and doing something with it, but you've got this one existing home, and I'm not comfortable with this one existing home and then maybe putting 20 apartments, and that's just way too much traffic for that road. I know that legally we meet all the requirements for the width of the road, but it's that's way past my comfort level, so I won't be supporting it.
Councilor Olson.
Yeah, she said exactly what I was thinking, so I won't be supporting it.
I think that it makes sense to me. It is directly adjacent to other high density. All we're really doing is moving the high density boundary over just slightly. I mean, we're not creating a pocket there. We are simply adjusting the boundary.
I'm just curious to staff because I haven't driven it. If this isn't changed, the applicants can put the cottage homes in, the single family homes in. Are there new single-family homes going up in this part of this immediate part of Ferndale? It tends to be multifamily.
It is primarily multifamily. However, on the other side of the street, the other side of Lego, we have the remainder of Vista Meadows, which did have a fair number of single family on there. But Lago, when you get south of Ferndale Terrace, is predominantly multifamily, or south of Siddle, I should say.
And remind us what the Planning Commission decided on this matter.
They were unanimous in approving.
Okay. Any more questions from council? I think you sound like Councilman Goodrich.
I can understand what the resident said with the house and having the density move around them. This is going to be an issue that we as a council are going to have a lot of coming to us as we do more infill into the city, the downtown area. Whether it's this project, the next project, we have a lot of single-family homes surrounded by area that could be multi. You just see it right now up on Vista and 4th, where they tore down single-family homes and are building multi-family things there. That part of the city is changing. Are we going to say no to every project that comes in because the area is changing? I know we got a lot of flack when we rezoned south of Main Street and said those houses down there are no longer conforming uses and things because that area is changing and what the city wants to do. So if, when you say no to this area because it impacts it, are you going to say no to every project that comes into this to the council or anything when we're trying to do what we were told to do, increase the density closer to downtown?
Mr. Barnett, you have comments.
The comprehensive plan that you just adopted anticipates growth. It anticipates infill. I would be very surprised if immediately after adopting the comprehensive plan, we do 180 degrees of what was just adopted.
That's a good point. And we do collect impact fees, traffic impact fees, for this very purpose. Any more questions from council? Councilman Lazar.
I just have a comment. One thing that was mentioned at the Planning Commission is we lack multifamily land out of the flood zone. So this is a nice little bump. It's multifamily across the street, below it, around it. It's a very multifamily feel area. So I'm in support of that.
And we are approving multifamily development up and down Main Street. So any more questions from council? Sounds like decisions have been made, but nonetheless, are you ready for the question?
Mm-hmm.
There's a motion on the table to rezone parcel 0.7 acres at Lago there from the two designations, Mr. Burnett?
To change the comprehensive plan designation from medium density residential to high density residential, and that would come with a corresponding rezone to RM 1.5.
Very good. All in favor of the rezone, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
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 It did get a majority, but it failed the threshold of 4 votes, with Councilmember Starr, Hansen, and Goodrich voting yes, Councilmember Watson, and Olson voting no. Thank you, staff.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Council.
One more quick question. So I guess it had to have 4 out of the 4 out of the 7 for
yep.
the
yeah.
rezone?
Yeah. Okay. And a recusal is considered a no vote.
These weren't recusals. These were abstentions.
Abstentions.
They're still here.
Mm-hmm.
An abstention counts as a no.
Yeah.
So that would be 5 no's.
Yeah, exactly.
3, pardon.
4 no's.
4 no's.
Four. Yeah.
Okay.
And 3.
Yeah. And it does need a majority of the council, so that would be 4 votes
okay.
for passage.
You might want to just explain to them that it did fail then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council.
Let's find my play card here, see where we were. Ah, exciting stuff. Item G, Fieldhouse Restrooms. Public Works Director Kevin Rentz, we're going to talk about bathrooms today.
I was going to do a really inspiring video with a nice soundtrack. I didn't have enough time to get it done. So. with the completion of Star Park, one of the things that's come up repeatedly is the lack of restroom facilities down in that area. It was a theme before Star Park was completed, and now that Star Park's done, it's been echoed quite a bit more. The capital improvement plan for 2016 was put together with modification to the field house. We had included $46,000 in that plan to do some renovation to that. There's some significant floodplain issues that need to be mitigated in that area, and I don't believe that the previous proposal was going to work out in that area. We had taken this to committees, and it discussed this both at the Public Works Committee and at the Finance Committee to do modifications to that area. The conclusion coming out of those two committees was that we would proceed forward with bringing it to the full council for discussion, a proposal to demolish the current field house and replace it with a prefabricated concrete precast restroom facility. These are available on the Washington State through a Washington State bid contract. I had included a staff report with a little bit of cost information, and I had refined that from the discussion that we had had at committees with a little bit more information. I would envision that the Public Works crew would do the demolition of the field house and prep the pad for placement of the structure. I would envision that we would do a contract for the plumbing and electrical stub-ups for the new building to be placed there. And then looking at the figures for the building, the two-unit restroom that was identified as the preferred solution through the committee discussion was for a cost of $41,500 for the bathroom facility with an ADA accessible exterior drinking fountain included in that. There's a delivery charge, some insulation, which includes the contractor coming in and connecting the installed stub outs to the building, and then sales tax, and the state gets their cut for having provided the bid that for a price of about $49,750,000 for the structure. I would anticipate that the electrical work and site preparation, including the demolition of the building, could be accomplished for the $15,000 to $20,000. So I would anticipate between $65,000 and $70,000 we could have the building placed down at the park. Now, there does need to be some finished sidewalk and slab done. I would envision that the city crews would be able to accomplish that following completion of the building. I had included a detail of the structure itself so that I think everybody has been able to have a chance to see that and see exactly what we're talking about with the prefab concrete structure. It includes stainless steel fixtures within the restroom, so it is vandalism resistant. And also, during my discussion with the manufacturer, they did indicate that their engineer is willing to provide certification that they are flood-proof or flood-resistant so that this can be installed in that location. So I don't know if there are further questions. I would be happy to answer them.
Councilmember Olson.
Kevin, since we're leaving the slab, we don't really have to say it's flood-proof, right? Isn't that the whole reason of leaving the slab is... If we had something there intact, what were we talking about in that?
With 50%?
Well, I believe it. I'll let Yuri.
How are we getting around the flood?
But there was discussion of doing modification to the structure, and within the floodplain, you can do a modification to the structure as long as you don't exceed 50% of the value of the original structure. Okay. So that was where envisioning of doing that. But that didn't leave enough funding available for us to make modification to that. So it's really, you know, the floodplain issues are driving a modification to that mindset that we were going to go forward with modifying the field house. At the end of this, for, you know, a modest amount of upcharge on what we had envisioned in both the capital improvement plan and the budget, I think we end up with a better facility that suits the needs of that location. Also provides, you know, it does provide the flood resistance. It does have the vandalism resistance. You know, it's easy to maintain. There's nothing there that can't be hosed down inside the bathroom. So.
What was the portion about we have to give the state a cut for what?
Well, anytime there's a state bid, and this is available off Washington State contracts. So Washington State, when they go through and do procurements and make those bids available to other members that are of the Washington State Purchasing Cooperative, the city of Ferndale is eligible to buy off of those contracts, and the state gets, and I believe it's like 0.74%. of the sales. I could get you the figure, but anytime you utilize a state contract, the state gets a cut to fund that portion of their.
So they get a little taste like Tony Soprano.
Exactly.
Nice. Yes.
Council, any more questions? Councilmember Watson, then Councilmember Goodrich.
So, Kevin, are you imagining this being like the Riverwalk bathrooms that, you know, in the worst parts of the winter, it's just not open, we've turned off the water, that kind of thing?
Or we can kind of go two ways with it, and it depends on if you want to fund the expenditure to add heat to the they don't heat the actual the company that manufactures these, they don't actually offer a heat package where they heat the actual restroom itself, but there's a restroom on each side with a utility corridor down the middle, and you can heat that utility corridor in the middle to provide that wintertime, you know, frost proofing. So there is the option for that, but with the drop-off in utilization of the facility during the wintertime, I would anticipate that we would close it during the wintertime.
Does this price include the hot water, though? I mean, just for washing your hands, hot water?
The price that I indicated there does include a on-demand hot water for the hand washing.
Councilmember Goodrich.
What type of lead time are we talking about for ordering this and delivery?
The representative from the CXG Precast, the company is they're manufactured in Spokane. The lead time was about 75 days. So once we get through the decision-making process, we could envision it being here in a relatively short period of time.
Anyone hasn't spoken? Councilmember Bush?
So this would be about three blocks from Star Park.
It's... And I had provided an aerial view, and I
was
apologize.
Was it 400 feet?
It was 600 feet was the straight line distance between the two. So it's
two football fields.
Two football fields, yeah. 300 yards. So I do appreciate the fact that it is relatively, you know, a long distance away from where the Star Park location is. We had discussion at the Public Works Committee about locating it closer to Star Park or locating a restroom facility closer to Star Park. There are some considerations with that. We need to extend utility services. We need to extend, you know, both or all three water, sewer, and electricity to a new location. And then there was also discussion about we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the rest of the area down there. There's been, I've heard, you know, floating of having a skate park in that location or, you know, something else that would occur down there. So I think until we have a, you know, kind of holistic view of what the finished product is going to be for that area, putting the restroom there may prove to be problematic and constrain us from being able to design something in the future. So this provides the lowest cost option to get a bathroom facility in the area, and I will agree that it's not ideally located for people using Star Park, although it is very well located for the complex as a whole, whether it's people that are utilizing the ball fields, we have the bike park, you know, we have the soccer fields that people utilize. So it's rather centrally located in on a holistic way.
But it's still, to me, it's still obscure. Is it safe for small, very small children to run to the restroom while their brothers and sisters are being watched with their mom?
We will still hang on to the ADA porta potty we have for a year or longer. So if you're a parent like me and you got the emergency, I got to do it now. You have a porta potty. If you're not so immediate, you can walk the distance.
It's over there by itself.
It's next to the ball fields. A lot of stuff going on there.
Like I said, we really do not have an expectation that this bathroom will serve the needs of Star Park long term. I think most of you are aware, SSC has kindly donated porta potty as well as the services to clean and maintain it for a year. So I think we have a little bit of time to see if this manufacturer's layout works well for us, to see what expansions to Star Park might be coming in the next year, to find and rebuild any monies that we want to next year to put in. So I envision a permanent bathroom somewhat near the Star Park in probably the next year or so. So I don't want the council to think that we're doing this and then we're going to turn our attention away from providing long-term permanent bathrooms for the Star Park.
I think Councilman Olson was next.
And Mark's not here. Where are we going to be funding this?
Right. That's the other thing is that because there are some small options that the council might want to take advantage of, nothing really to change the total dollar amounts dramatically, but there are some options to consider. And since my understanding from talking with Mark before he left, that I believe he wanted to try to see if we could pay for this out of the park mitigation fund. And right now, if most of you will remember from budget time, much of the annual park mitigation funds go towards pre-existing debt service. And Mark is probably going to want to see some more revenue come in before that. We do have some other sources of revenues as well.
And we cannot pay it out of impact fees. Those have very specific line items, and it did not include a park. Or, I'm sorry, it included Star Park. It did not include a bathroom.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're asking us to approve something, and we don't know where the money's coming from?
Well, what we'll do is...
Home water, maybe?
we'll bring back to committee and then bring back to you via budget amendment the exact dollar amount, which might vary slightly from this, but not greatly, as well as the revenue source. What we wanted tonight really was the idea of conceptually whether this type of bathroom in this configuration and approximately this dollar magnitude is something, and then is something that the council would be amenable to. So we'll finalize it.
We're getting the cart in front of the horse. I personally like, when I go to the store, I like to know if I have the money to buy it before I buy it and then try and figure out where I'm getting the money. So that kind of...
Yeah. If you would like to defer the decision instead of having kind of a two-part decision as to whether this is a good idea and then this is how much we're going to pay and how we're going to pay for it...
I could make a motion to approve it contingent on we find the funding, and if we don't find the funding, then it dies.
I would second that.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think there's a staff looking for it.
Yeah. That was the intention. We wanted to kind of bring this to you, but realize that we're not asked. You're not authorizing exact the actual purchase.
Yeah. I'm trying to be responsive to the desire that was expressed.
Blaming you. I just want to hear, you know, where we're going to get the money from. It's a little thing.
It's a detail.
I know, and I have had the discussion with Mark about the fact that the funding is slow to come in.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
More questions of staff. Councilmember Watson.
I guess I do want us to try and make a decision. I mean, it's 75 days, so at this point we wouldn't get it until the first week in September, which would give us time. So, I mean, at some point either we're going to get it for this year or we're going to get it for next year. So
exactly. Yeah. Well, our intention would be to bring it back to the next committee meeting and then back here, perhaps even at our next council meeting.
Okay.
Would that be fast enough to...
Well, can you, if we order it, are we under, I hate to order something. In
there. Yeah, you really, it's like putting the grocery in your bags and then going up the register and, yeah.
It's very American. You know?
Is there any way, Mark, I know he's out.
He'll be back tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he could get us an answer relatively fast. It'll be coming out of park mitigation.
Right. I think he was hopeful that he'd be able to see, not on park mitigation.
Can't do that. That would be illegal.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll probably be
for new stuff.
It's not on the list, so it will not happen.
It has to be on a list?
Yes.
There's a list. There's a list.
Just like traffic impact fees. It can only
change lists all the time.
The legislature has to change the list.
Oh, that list.
That list.
Yeah, that list, yeah. So yeah, you'll get an answer rather soon. I think he had hoped that he could look at another month's worth of revenues. And we're getting near the end of the month, so those numbers are going to be coming in.
Okay.
More comments? Mm-hmm. Council, it is a pleasure. Councilmember Czar.
I will comment that the Parks Board is in support of this.
Okay. So what is the motion, really? I mean, what?
I approve
it's
to
a discussion.
Purchase it contingent upon we have an adequate funding source. We will vote on as a...
Is there a motion in that?
I don't...
I already said it once. Yeah.
Move?
Can I just confirm?
Sure.
Council member Olson moved that the city purchase the bathrooms contingent on...
Finding a funding source.
Legal funding.
Securing funding.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that we will also approve.
Good.
Later.
Approval of funding, correct.
Okay, so it does need to come back to us.
Yes, you'll get one more shot.
I will get together with Mark and finalize the figures for him and then bring it forward to Finance Committee at the next available opportunity.
Okay.
I need a second.
Council, was there a second?
I did second.
Been moved by Councilmember Olson, seconded by Councilmember Watson, to approve the purchase of this prefabricated restroom, give or take, design questions, upon adequate funding provided by Mr. Peterson, when he gets back, where council will need to approve that funding. Am I close enough for you?
Yes.
Any more questions from council? Seeing none. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion is passed 7-0, and we will hear back from staff in 2 weeks about funding sources.
Thank you very much, though.
Yes, indeed. Going on, we have my glasses are off. turning the over the management of the Pioneer Pavilion to the Chamber of Commerce. And I believe, is this Mr. Young on this one? Or Mr. Sweeney?
I can speak to it.
Sure. So we'll tag team with Mr. Sweeney.
There we go. I'll get to the microphone here. Riley Sweeney, Communications Officer and Temporary Clerk. I met with Ann Klein today and Tony Siegerman. Tony Siegerman is the staff member who's been working on the pavilion rentals over the last couple of months, and Ann Klein is the Chamber of Commerce president. And we discussed the details on how them taking over the rental of the pavilion would streamline a number of issues that have arisen. Those of you who are on the CCAB committee are familiar with these, but there's been some challenges having to do with the fact that Ann Klein is at the location and does the initial tour, and then when the prospective renter comes to City Hall, they get the keys and then they go back and try and get into the space early, and there's not clear about what they can hang on the walls and the flow of the deposits. And so it's been taking a great deal of staff time to oversee this process, and so Ann Klein proposed that we streamline it and outsource the management of the pavilion rental to the Chamber of Commerce for the cost of their current rent.
Questions from Council, Councilmember Burst and Councilmember Goodrich.
I'm going to abstain from voting because I do sit on their board of directors.
Councilmember Goodrich.
I was asked by the Heritage Society president to ask why this new sign is on the front of the, and I got a picture of it here and I'll read it. On the front of the pavilion, it says, "No public restrooms. This is a private facility, and use of restrooms for anyone other than visitor center or chamber guest is not allowed. Public restrooms can be found to the left behind the Tillicum House, open from 11:30 to 4:30. There are also public restrooms at the fountain on the River Walk on Main Street."
Thank you, Councilmember. I suggest that we take that. I don't think it's germane to this. If
I think it is,
right?
Because
otherwise,
if the chamber is the ones that put that sign up and they're taking over the management of it, does that mean that the restrooms, what's the deal on the restrooms there? Because those restrooms were presented to the council as that would be the main restrooms for Pioneer Park in that area. And then the old restrooms would be gutted and turned into storage. And now we're finding out we're using the old restrooms. And the new restrooms, I guess, are no longer being used by the public unless you're going to the visitor center.
Except for the pleasure of council, I think it's a separate, rather unrelated issue, but it'll leave up to council if you think this is worth a discussion. Councilmember Watson.
I guess I do only because I want to make sure that the building still belongs to us. So any of those kind of rules changes, did that rule change come through committee? I know we've talked about it because it's been hard. People have been going in during events.
Right. I do not remember it being talked at committee, but I do remember the issue has come up that when the pavilion is actively rented, so when someone's having whatever event in there, it can be a little difficult for the visitors to come in and then use the restrooms when the event is going on. It can be somewhat disruptive. At one point, I know casually when we talked about this, there are the doors on the side of the pavilion that, of course, you can gain access to the restrooms. And while I was not aware that this change was being made, we did talk about conceptually the idea of restricting access coming in the front door using the bathrooms, but perhaps allowing access for the public on the side doors, as you know, directly almost outside of Pioneer Park. So that's something but to answer your question, yes, this building will still be the City of Ferndale's building. My anticipation is that the CCAB would continue, and if not in its current role, an expanded role on the oversight of this, and my hope is that the CCAB would be the group that could indeed vet some of these issues prior to bringing any permanent changes like that to the City Council for approval.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Any questions? Let's go to Councilmember Taylor and then Councilmember Olson.
How much do they pay for rent right now?
$785?
$785, $795, just a little bit south of $800.
How much time does it take for our city
staffers to...
It's actually been taking a it, probably more than the $800 a month.
The dollar amount.
Yeah, yeah, considerably more.
Yeah. And council, I sat with my calculator and ran the numbers. This is a steal of a deal for City Hall.
As far as staff utilization.
Yes.
Because it's not just Tony's time is also involved. My time gets drawn in. Susan's time gets drawn in.
The mayor's time gets called to let people
so
in.
So if they take charge and there's some vandalism to the building, then it's the person that rented the facility's responsibility to make the...
We collect a damage deposit.
Yeah, and that's one thing that will not be changing, and that's really, it's just good financial controls. Those payments of the rentals, the payments of the damage deposits, and any other equipment usage deposits, all those monies will still be collected and held by the city. They'll need to come up to City Hall to make a payment, so that way our receiving system includes all the monies that flow into the city.
And proof of insurance. And
yeah, exactly. I also wanted to mention, too, that what we're really talking about here is a one-year agreement.
Mm-hmm.
The CCAB's new, the pavilion's new, this management concept is new. So the thought was, let's give it a try for a year. If it does not work, then we can change. If it kind of works, we can change. If it really works, we might even want to make small changes.
There's even discussion of profit sharing. You know, there's an incentive, profit incentive to them, for them to rent out or to upsell the thing and rent more things. If they're sure. But we don't know the numbers yet. Kind of a year needs to go by. But this is the one-year test, which I think will save the city money, regardless of how they
do. Especially as we start getting equipment, audio, video equipment that's going to need to be rented out.
And watched.
You're going to need someone down there to physically hand the microphone to someone and then get the microphone physically handed back to them.
Council member Olson.
We're throwing around the word damage deposit. How much?
I'm not sure what
$400.
$400.
Okay.
And then I'm sorry, $100 and some dollar cleaning fee that's not refundable.
Okay.
And these are fees you've adopted at an earlier meeting, not so long ago.
Yeah.
Which we can revisit anytime you want. Any more questions of staff?
I didn't even begin to say I was done.
You have the floor. Go ahead.
I'm against a year. For those of you who weren't on, we gave them a reduced rent in order to get in there and do some of this. And they're living up to that part of it, but yet now we're going to give even more. I would be willing to try it, but I would like to try it at a three-month interval because we don't know how – this is summer when lots of things are going on. If it goes down to nothing come October, then why are we giving away the rent when they're having one function or something? So I would like to see it in three-month increments, and if it's going good and we agree, then we give them another three and another three and go past that.
I think staff might suggest that would be challenging because you're making reservations now for events that will take place in 3 months, so you have this overlap.
We're just trying to see how well they do it.
I think that would be better done in a longer period of time. Mr. Sweeney.
I just politely disagree with your contestant that this is the busy season. We already have a number of events booked for October, November, and December. So.
I used to work for the federal government, and I love these terms that we have a number of events. A number could be one, a number could be 20.
I know that we have 8 reservations in October. Beyond that, I do not recall.
Okay. All right. I might go 6. But
December 31st?
Sure.
Any more questions of staff?
Well,
comments? Councilmember Hanson.
Councilmember Burch
was
ahead of me.
But I do have a question on the equipment, the AV equipment. When they rent the equipment from us and they damage, who's responsible for the replacement cost?
I believe that would come out of their damage deposit. Yes.
Damage deposit?
I would think that as we move on, and we get more amenities that are able to be rented, that there'll be a list of the amenity, be it a stage or a microphone or whatever it might be, and then the associated deposit that would go along with it.
Yeah, and the mayor would like to encourage council to keep the discussion germane to the subject of the management of the facilities. Fees we've discussed and voted upon already, we can bring them back anytime. Council Member Taylor.
If the damages went beyond the $400, how do we deal with that?
That's why we require insurance as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was going to say, we will need to bring back a formal amendment to the contract. So if you approve it tonight, then we will bring back probably at the next meeting the actual, you know, contract that has all the identification and insurance and all the messy details in it.
Will you run it through committees again?
Absolutely.
So everybody gets a chance to.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Council, what is your pleasure? Councilmember Olson.
I would make a motion to approve it on a temporary basis through December 31st of this year and reassess for extensions.
There needs to be a second when the motion dies.
I can second for the discussion.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the proposal, but up to December 31st is there discussion. Councilmember Hansen.
Well, I would actually oppose that motion as it's stated at this point. My experience in this industry, 6 months is not enough time for them to even get their legs underneath them. There are a lot of systems, a lot of sales pitches and promotions that need to get worked through. They're barely going to hit their stride in 6 months. And then we're the potentially of pulling the contract from them at that point. I think in the interest of consistency, that it needs to be a year or we take a step back and we look at other alternatives for managing the pavilion. I think I'm comfortable with a year, but be honest, I'd like to see a serious reassessment after a year because I have my reservations about this.
So do they.
But I think it needs to be a year or it's really not worth the time.
You can amend the motion. You can amend the motion to change.
In the interest of that.
You've been on this path before.
I will make an amendment to extend the contract to for a full year, for a full 12 months, say, beginning August 1st.
So the motion is to really to amend the main motion to change it from 6 months or whatever the number was to December 31st and make it a full year from the date of the contract. That is the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
To move and seconded to amend the main motion. So the discussion now is on the length of time, from whether 6 months or 12 months. Is there more discussion? Councilmember Goodrich.
I agree with Councilmember Hansen as somebody who was involved in this in the past and things. A year is more realistic. Things. We may look at it, you know, get a report back from staff or them in 6 months to say, you know, kind of how's it going, but, you know, really a year is more realistic.
And I, as a mayor, I wouldn't be surprised if they won't do it for 6 months. It may not be worth their effort.
Councilmember Taylor. I also agree with Councilmember Hansen.
Any more discussion on the amendment to the motion? Seeing none, the question is on the amendment. Whether the main motion will say 6 months, give or take, or 12 months. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
So I believe it passed 5-1. Councilmember Olson voting nay. Councilmember Birch abstaining, correct? Thank you, Councilmember. We now move to the main motion, which is to adopt the full proposal to turn over the management of the pavilion to the Chamber of Commerce for 1 year. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the main motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Once again, the same. 5 voted yes. Councilmember Versch abstained. Councilmember Olson voted no. And the motion has passed, and the management of the pavilion will go to the chamber, and you'll bring a contract back to us in a couple of weeks. Thank you, Council, and thank you, staff. And we're down to mayor report, and I have none other than thank the Council for the good work tonight. Council, do you have your reports? Councilmember Olson.
I don't know how many of you read the paper today about the funding plan for the work group for the new jail. We got screwed. We have one official representing 5 small cities. So one person covers all the 5 cities other than Bellingham. Bellingham gets 5 people on this 14-member crew. The county gets 5 people on the 14-member crew. And the small cities get 1. So, when that comes around...
They can figure out how to pay for it, then.
Well said, Councilman.
It's going to be what Bellingham wants. It's
kind of like in the federal government, you get the decision and you work backwards how we got there. So they want a property tax increase, mark my words.
Any other council reports? That was a good one, by the way.
Thank you.
Any other? Councilmember Birch.
The Ferndale Farmers Market is up and running. It's had two Friday afternoons, and I appreciate everybody that has attended. It's a good attendance. I ask lots of children, have you played at the new Star Park? And they go, what? What Star Park?
Oh, my goodness.
There's still kids out there that don't know about it.
Oh, my
goodness. There's no banana parking, though. I went down in every parking space. I had to park by Pioneer Pavilion.
Yeah, I see people when I do tours. I see people doing that parking at Pioneer Pavilion, walking down.
It's a good problem.
Mm-hmm. Other reports from council?
AWC conference.
Yeah. Three council members, and I think Mr. Sweeney and the mayor are going to AWC and the exciting city of Everett, Washington. So there you go. Seeing no other council reports, we'll go to staff reports, starting with the community development director.
Nope.
No. Public Works.
Thank you for all we've
done. There you go. Our chief of police, sir. Thank you. Our city administrator.
Also.
Communications officer.
We're still trying to raise money for Star Park.
Oh, God, give it a rest.
Just because it's built doesn't mean that it's done. So we've still got several components that are looking for sponsors. So if you happen to have $2,200 in your pocket, there's some low rings that could have your name on it. So,
and strange lost and found things.
Yes. We still have lost and found items from the build. So if you're missing a jacket.
Or a stuffed animal.
Or a stuffed animal and sunglasses.
Or $2,000 on a wallet.
Counselor, I'd be pleased to entertain a motion.
So moved.
Oh, yes. So moved.
So moved and seconded to dismiss. All in favor say aye.
Aye.